Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boys Lip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Fellow de Borgeses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiasts and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Just enjoying it.
Yeah, great weather.
Oh, wow, that last, yeah, in the background, I heard that. Thank you for your enthusiasm. pretty cool. That's awesome. Yeah, a bit cold outside, but it was good. Welcome to All About Wine, live from Florida, as always, every week on Blog Talk Radio and AFRN, and it's great to be on there as well. Yes. Now that we have our show stuff situated and it's easier to produce, we can be running smoothly over there. So welcome to the show. And as I put on Twitter and Ron put on Facebook, unfortunately our guest tonight will not be with us. That we hopefully hear next week, and we'll cover that next week. So cool.
Yeah,
but tonight. Yeah, they did cancel.
You tuned in to listen to about, Island Grove Wine Company. They're not going to join us since it is too bad.
Yeah. Well, we'll try next time.
Yeah, we got them next week. Hopefully, as long as there's no complications or problems next week, we got them next week. You know, listening to that opening got me thinking a couple of things there. Number one, you ever notice how wineries, the names of wineries, how different they are. You know, you make an auto body shop and it's Pete's Auto Body, and you open up, you know, different things and all that, and you name it after yourself or something like that. But wineries, the names for wineries are really just sort of, you know, just listening to that opening, it really put up a whole bunch of different ones, and all the ones we've talked to and the ones, you know, I've searched through and stuff like that, and they're really some unique, strange names for some of the wineries.
Right.
It just struck me when we were listening to the opening there that you know, all the different names and, you know, the origins of a lot of those names are, when we talk to them, we ask them, that's when, oh, it makes sense. But, you know, you look at it,
yeah.
it doesn't mean anything at all, you know.
Is there any significance to why you called it that? And it's either a river or a person or the region. I don't know. It's just, it's interesting how they come up with it and, make a brand out of it. So.
Yeah, and it happens, all the time on every winery we talk. Even when we talk to people for Barefoot Winery, how they came up with the concept of barefoot and using that and all. So, it's
interesting.
It struck me as I was listening to that how diversified the names are and all that for wineries. So.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So tonight we are covering. I guess that's the show. Thank you for tuning in.
Yes, thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. I have nothing, I can tell you that.
I mean, few things here. Yeah.
There you go. Okay, good. Woo.
Yeah. Okay. Just a few things. You know, I always say that, and I end up talking for the hour. But still, I have a few things to pass on, a few bits and tidbits of information and knowledge and stuff, and that you may or may not find interesting. Oh, another thing I thought of too. I always tell people that come into the winery as I'm talking to them, I say, "Oh, I do a Blog Talk Radio every Thursday. If you want to learn more about wine, you need to tune in on it." And we've done shows on corks, and we've done shows on haunted wineries. I had some people from Virginia in about 3 days ago, and I mentioned haunted wineries, and they go, "There's two of them in Virginia." And I go, "Really?" And they go, "Yeah." And I said, "Where?" And they gave me the name. So I don't have them in front of me, but they told me two wineries in Virginia that are haunted. And so we've got a couple more to add to our list of haunted wineries. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's
October is right around the corner. We'll have to cover that. Before you know it, it'll be upon us. So, yeah, very
it
good.
It will. And so we got two more haunted wineries. So, and we haven't talked to Virginia yet either. So that's, down the road. So that's, it'll, work out well for us there. But two more haunted wineries I found.
Yeah.
So, now.
Interesting.
Well, we got some just bits and pieces of stuff to you. First thing I want to tell you about, though, and this isn't wine, but this is alcohol. And I saw this, and it caught my eye, and I wanted to share this little quick article with you here. Macallan M. Imperial. Now, it's a rare 6-liter Imperial version of Macallan M., the world's most sophisticated single malt whiskey, contained within a meticulously crafted crystal decanter, has been sold for $628,000 at Sotheby's in Hong Kong last month. M was created from the collaboration between three masters of their crafts: Fabian Baron, founder and creative director of Baron & Baron, Silvio Dins, president and CEO of La Cue, and Bob Delgarno, whiskey maker at the Macallan. To celebrate the conception of M and its global launch in Hong Kong, 4 6-liter Imperial decanters were specially crafted by La Cue for the Macallan. These are the largest decanters ever made by La Cue. Each decanter requires the work of 17 craftsmen, including two with the prestigious title Melveur Auvergne de France. And I'm sure I destroyed the pronunciation of that. With each taking more than 50 hours to complete each decanter. $638,000 for a 6-liter Imperial version of single malt whiskey. I saw that and I went, "Oh wow!" And I just wanted to pass that on. So, when the listeners out there bought that, then be sure to send me a little taste.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got different things we're going to talk about tonight. One thing I want to do. I want to tell all of you, if you are not already subscribing to Joy's Joy of Wine, then you need to do so. It is a blog. Joy's Joy of Wine is a blog. It's for the wine drinker who simply wants to appreciate wine. And she does a very good blog. I've had her on the program a couple times. She also does a blog called A Grave Interest, which for those of you out there, like Mike, who enjoy cemeteries and tombstones and the different architecture and all that, she does a blog on cemeteries called The Grave Interest. You can check that out. But Joy of Wine is a blog she does every Wednesday and comes out every Wednesday. The one yesterday that she came out with was What Makes a Wine Organic in the United States. Now, we've talked about organic wines here, and I'm not going to go through the whole article here, but one thing she hit up on a lot here was sulfites. Wines made from organically grown grapes without any added sulfites. Organic grown without any added sulfites. All wines have sulfites. We've mentioned this before and time and again. All wines have sulfites. Organically grown grapes have no sulfites added. Now, I've cautioned before on that term. The term organic or organically grown means that synthetic fertilizers and all that other stuff cannot be used. Organic usually is manure to fertilize and chickens and any number of things out there to eat the bugs and all sorts of other natural predators, ladybugs and praying mantises and all sorts of stuff on that. They gather rainwater and use it on that. They don't use any type of sprayed pesticides and all. One of the reasons for that is that when you spray stuff onto grapes, they tend to pick it up and feed it into the grapes themselves. Trace amounts, yes, but it's still in there. So there's that people who are against that. I have to share another thing with you, too. I had a couple come into the winery. Couple 3 weeks ago, and they did a tasting of all the wines, and I always started telling them that we use grapes from the University of Florida, altered genetic and hybrid grapes from the University of Florida. I don't use the muscadine, which grows wild here in Florida. I use a University of Florida genetically altered one. IFAS does the grapes, and I've been using that. And I mentioned that to these people, and they were very hesitant. I go, what's wrong? Is there a problem? They say, well, yes, we are all natural. Everything's organic and all that, and you're using genetically altered grapes. And I was baffled. I didn't never think about it being bad for you. It's just that it's been changed, as have crops for years. It just is something I follow quite a bit in the genetic fields and stuff like that, and not because of grapes so much, just the fact that it's something I find interesting that people are so afraid of it. And, I mean, in all reality, just about everything that we eat has been changed over the years, has been bred to bring out better qualities, has been bred and crossbred and has been changed basically on the genetic level to bring out the best qualities, and grapes that way too. I mean, a Cabernet Sauvignon grape. I mean, look at some of the grapes out of Oregon. We talked to Oregon wineries, and they were talking about all the different strains of the Pinot Noir grape. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to make a stand one way or the other, but I just, you know, there's a lot of them. But these people were concerned because I was using genetically engineered grapes on some of the grapes I have. But organic. Excuse me. Organic. Now, organic wines, all wines have sulfites. It's just a natural byproduct of fermentation. Most of it is rather low. You're not going to get many sulfites, but it is in everything. Very few people are allergic to sulfites. I think the percentage is extremely low. But traditionally grown grapes, the ones that you do, can legally have sulfite levels up to 350 parts per million. We've talked about that before. Now, 350 parts per million is a lot. That really is a lot. If you have a wine with 350 parts per million sulfites in it, you can pretty much smell it. You're going to say, ooh, what is that smell? And it is your sulfites. You're not going to get it that high. no winery I know of brings it up that high. It's just a lot. In fact, most of the wineries I know, most people I've talked to, and most of them who are you know, honest with me, most of them keep it below 100. Most are between, I don't know, 50 and 60. White wines usually a little bit more, red wines a little less, but right around that area there. But if it's labeled made from organic grapes, they can contain as much as 100 parts per million of sulfites, which is actually higher than what most wineries put in their wine. So it's something to consider there. Since 1987, the ATTB has required that all imports and domestic wines, beers, and spirits in the United States contains the label warning contains sulfites. If it has more than 10 parts per million. Now, 10 parts per million is about average for organic grapes. You know, Joy says that most organic wines contain from 6 to 40 parts per million naturally. I've heard it runs between 10 and 15 on most organics, or on most, I'm sorry, 10 to 15 is standard for what you get when you ferment grapes. That is your natural byproduct of fermentation. So 6 to 40 parts per million. 40 parts per million is quite a bit, actually. And so that's still organic. And I want to warn people, too, watch your labeling. I picked up a wine a while back that said no detectable sulfites. That was the term used, no detectable sulfites. And so I grabbed this. I'm thinking, oh, this should be interesting. I take it back into the winery, into the lab, and I test the sulfites on it just because, well, I want to see how detectable the no detectable sulfites were. And I tested for sulfites, and I detected 85 parts per million. And I'm going, whoa, what? No detectable. I thought I did something wrong. And even though I do detect or test for sulfites all the time, I thought I did something wrong. So I tested again. And sure enough, it was right around 85 parts per million. And I was amazed that they can say no detectable sulfites in this, and this thing was up to 85 parts per million. This is higher than most wineries that I have ever talked to. And so I was complaining to a group one day about this. I told them, be careful, because these things, how could they say no detectable? And one gentleman says, well, what testing were you? What standard were you using? And I said, well, I was using, you know, pretty close to, it's like every 1 to 3 parts per million I can test. It's that down that close at that level. And so it was, you know, if I detect 85, it's right at 85. And so he said, well, maybe they were using a testing system that started at 100, and it was every 100 points. Well, that pretty much would explain why they would not detect 85 parts per million, because their lowest was 100 parts per million. And I thought to myself, wow. So, you know, the sulfite situation, be careful. It's you're not allergic to sulfites. You don't have to worry about it. I mentioned this, I don't know how many times before on this show, and I mentioned it to people coming in and all that. Very seldom are people allergic to sulfites. And if you are, it's not going to be the liquid form. It's going to be the powder form. That's the one that's going to plug you up and stuff like that. And speaking of plug up, Mike, are you getting any problems with the pollen that we have around here?
Yes.
Oh,
well,
it's driving
my car is.
Yeah, well, the car, yeah. I'm driving me nuts. I get to a point where sometimes I can't talk. It's just plugged my head up. So.
Oh,
but,
wow.
You know, oh, I know. Mm. They have a little chart on the paper that shows, you know, the pollen level. And this morning, the pollen level was off the charts. I mean, literally off the chart. It was so high that they didn't even show it on the chart. Oh, unbelievable.
That's why my car is green now.
Yeah, I know. I you know, yellowish green and all. That rain yesterday helped a little bit, though, but it's still there.
Yes, it did. I think that's part of the north, the people who get all the snow and the salt, because we made comment to them last, maybe a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I said something about the salt on the cars. Oh, they're coming down here. Yeah. And they sent all the pollen down here to turn our cars green.
Yeah, so, I think so. Yeah. Good
yeah.
point there, yeah, because that's all your comments about washing your car, and then all of a sudden
that's
our
right.
cars are yellow and green. Yeah.
Now we have to wash our car.
That's right. That's right.
get the green off of there. Thank you very much, by the way, those people up north. Appreciate that.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. It's bad.
No, yep. No. But the pollen driving me crazy on talking half the time. I start getting plugged up and I can't talk. But, okay, that just, you know, we're talking about. You're not allergic to sulfite, so don't be concerned about it. But, you know, the sulfite you use to stabilize the wine, to keep it on the shelf, to keep it from spoiling, it's a stabilizer. It's used for a lot of stuff, for cleaning and different things like that, too. So it's used quite often in wines, and it's not going to hurt you. But organic wines, don't use them. They try to keep it down and keep it certified organic. The United States, and this is basically one of the main things in this, the United States laws are a lot tighter than they are anywhere else in the world for organic wines. We have tighter rules and regulations for organic wines than they do anywhere else, and for organic growing and all that. So when you start seeing these different things on bottles, if you're really shopping for organic, shop for United States organic. Stay away from the other countries, because you know, you really, really might get yourself into a situation where it's the rules are so strange that you're not going to get nearly what you want. And one of the other things too, a lot of wine drinkers don't care for organic. And this, there's been surveys done, there has been things. Yes, there's people out there who look for the organic and they buy the organic and they like the organic. But overall, they've done organic tastings with traditional wine growing. And they find that the people in general say that the organic wines lack the quality, lack the taste, like the they spoil easier, actually. They spoil faster. It needs to be turned over. It needs to be sold. And it doesn't have to Christmas sometimes and all that. So organic wines, and, hey, more power to you wine growers out there who are doing organic, more power to you people who love your organic wines. But in overall tasting tests and all that, organic wines were really scored a lot lower than traditional wines. So I just want to go through that. Again, Joy's Joy of Wine, if you don't subscribe to it, I highly suggest that you do, because it really is a great blog. She comes out every Wednesday with it, and she has a lot of information. She's always always very good about getting good stuff and researching it well and finding it and all that. So check that out, Joy's Joy of Wine. I've got a few other things I want to pass on to you here, a few other bits of information and a few other bits of thing. One of the things that in discussion groups that I've noticed is I wanted to talk a little bit about what's more important for wine, the right label or the right price? That's an interesting question. You want to say that the price drives wines, but, you know, do you shop by label? Are you going out there and picking up something because the label is driving you to it? Do you look for your label, or are you swayed by something else? If something has the DOCG from Italy, which is their same as our AVA, or it has these different things, or if it's Italian wine, you gravitate toward the wine, Italian wine, because it's the label says it's Italian, or are you actually looking for price range on it and saying, well, this is a good price, I'm going to look at this because it's a good price. Most wines that are bought are between $7 and $15. That's the price range, and pretty much everyone knows that too. This is the price range that people buy. This is the ones that people get almost all the time, and so this is the price range that people look at. And so since they're already locked into that price range, do they then shop by label within that price range, or are they back to the default wines? I don't know. You know, it just, the more I read this and the more I started to see different people's comments on this, I don't think there's one or the other. I think basically it's both. People have their wines that they like, but if they see something else in their price range, I think it's going to be within the price. People overall don't jump up out of the comfort zones, and the comfort zones for most people are $7 to $15. Jump up there. I encourage people all the time, get out of your comfort zone, get out of that price range, and jump on up into the $15 to $30 price range. $15 to $30 price range gives you so much more quality for what you're getting, and it's worth it. It really is a nice jump. But I think the general consensus of the whole thing on that, which is, will you shop by price or label, I don't think there's an answer. I really don't think that there's anything that people can say it's one or the other. If you, you know, you have a thought, drop me a line. I'll be happy to address it. But, you know, just want to hit that a little bit. Malolactic bacteria protein mapped, genetically map malolactic fermentation. Now, malolactic fermentation is the butteriness you get in Chardonnays. A lot of red wines also go through a malolactic fermentation. It softens them, it smooths them out and all that. The malolactic fermentation bacterium that causes it, that causes malolactic acid, has been genetically mapped. Spanish and Italian scientists broke it down. So when they do stuff like that, not far behind where they start getting able to make something else to make it taste that way without going through the malolactic fermentation. it almost always seems to be the case. Annual wine auctions, the Napa Valley Barrel Auction, which is a big one every year, really outdid itself first part of this year, over almost $6 million. It's wine auction in the Napa area up there, done every year. A lot of the proceeds go to good causes and charities and stuff. I've been to those years ago. They've been doing that for ages, and I've been to those years ago, and they're always fun auctions, fun to watch, and fun to see how they're conducted, and the money raised is fantastic. Red wine has been found to stop lung cancer. I think I read that last week, didn't I? Or a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember if I talked about that or not. I was talking about the benefits of red wine, but I might have been talking to my wife about this. But red wine, they're finding that there's things in red wine. I think I just talked about cancer in itself, but they're finding red wine can help stop lung cancer growth. It is based on the fact that if I can get my computer to move here, the screen, so I can tell you about it. Wine Spectators came out with the study conducted by Brock University and McMaster University in Ontario. It's a Canadian company, our Canadian universities. Red wine is known to be rich in resveratrol, an antioxidant in the skins. It's credited with protecting everything from obesity to heart attacks. Studies are also finding that it, as a whole, it can stop or limit cancer cell growth. They have found that in recent studies, researchers measured red and white wine impact on non-small cell carcinoma, lung cancer cells, by exposing samples of lung cancer cells to Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, and Riesling. Red wines effectively stop the spread of cancer cells by 2%. And while similar results didn't happen for white wines. So they're saying red wine will add that to the list, will stop cancer cells and will also prevent the dosage of, or the spread of cancer cells and lung cancer. Cool. Even another reason, as if we needed any more, another reason to be drinking red wine. Kurt Russell has a wine out. He is also distributing that. I just read where another actress has got a wine out now too. They're going crazy. I guess you got to have the money to do that stuff, and actors and actresses do have the money. As I said before, saying in the wine industry, you know how to make a small fortune in the wine industry? Start with a large fortune. French biodynamic winemaker. I mentioned this. France has rules about spraying, and you have to spray. It's required to spray a chemical on the vineyards because a disease called flavulescence dorée. I think that's how it's pronounced. But the French vineyards are required to spray because of that disease. The French swear it's similar to the threat levels of phylloxera disease that destroyed the vineyards in the late 1900s in France. And so they have a law that it is required to spray. And an organic, and we just talked about organic, an organic wine grower, a grape grower in France, is facing fines of £30,000 and possibly prison sentence and $1,000 a day for not spraying. And they're saying that if his plants are diseased, then it could spread to others and all that. The verdict is still out on it. They don't know yet. The final verdict is due on April the 7th, but it's in the law. That they have to spray because of flavescence, I think it's pronounced Dore, FlavescenceDoree. So I can look that up. I've got an app. I was telling everybody about the wine apps. I've got an app, and this is one of the apps that I have, that Wine Dictionary app. And the Wine Dictionary app is, let's see, search the word here. Okay. We'll see how good this app is. And if you don't have this app, FLAV, no, it's not even listed because I've got FLAV and it's not here. Sorry, I couldn't find the word. The dictionary can only contain generic terms. All right. Well, so much for that. So, I'm just going to brag about an app I got, and it's not going to give me any information. So, oh well. Flavulescence dorée, I think it's pronounced. But French are required to spray, and this biodynamic wine. Oh, I said organic. He's biodynamic, which is even the next step. We talked about biodynamic last week. He's even a step further than organic. So that's interesting there. So, and let's see. I've got something else. Let's talk about this. The University of Minnesota. We have mentioned how good they are at making cold hardy grapes. University of Minnesota is saying that there should be cold hardy grapes should be incorporated within a lot more vineyards. And this winter has proved it. They're saying resilient wine grapes have contributed a $400 million impact in this country. Excuse me. Sub-zero temperatures have been spreading around the country, and the economic impact of its cold varieties from University of Michigan are withstanding these frigid temperatures, and it's keeping the grapes going. And the wineries going found that cold hardy wine grapes pumped $401 million into the U.S. economy in 2011, and it continues to do so. University of Minnesota developed these grapes. According to the university, four varieties that it created have been key contributors in the industry's growth: Frontenac Gris, La Crescent, and Marquis. And we've talked to wineries who have all said that they grow those and that they're happy and thrilled with them. The development of these varieties have made it possible to grow grapes in regions that have been unsuitable for wine grapes in the past because it got so cold. If you get regular grapes, I say regular grapes, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, these grapes, if you get a sustained temperature of below minus 20, minus 24 degrees for an extended period of time, the insides of the grapes freeze and they cannot recover. It actually kills them. And so with the extremely cold temperatures they've been getting up in that part of the country, it is University of Minnesota has developed these cold hardy grapes, and they're saying that the economic impact all through the Midwest has made it a phenomenally good thing to do, and that they are thrilled with it and they are working on more. So that's it's great. Gallo Winery is now big time into the United Kingdom market. They've launched two new brands called Dark Horse and Apothic Red, and it is taking over. Gallo is spreading out there. There's a California grape yield and quality is high last year, and despite the beginning of a drought, although it is still under drought, even with some of the rains that went through there, they are still concerned about the drought and the impact of the weather throughout that region. New Jersey. New Jersey as a wine state is jumping up. New Jersey, when we talked to New Jersey when we were going through the states, New Jersey was a rather small producer. We found that there was a lot of wineries up in the northern part of New Jersey, and there was a few down the southern part. But overall, New Jersey wasn't a big number of wineries. It wasn't a big wine state when we talked to them. Now, New Jersey has always centered around the transportation one kind or another, and it was the highways, and now it's all about bridges and tunnels. Governor Chris Christie is, talking about different things. As for years, it's just, you're from New Jersey, which exit. But they're changing now. The wineries in New Jersey are starting to pick up. There's more and more popping up throughout New Jersey. Cameron Stark of Unionville Vineyards has said that we're too far from the highways, he jokes, because it's not right on an exit. He said winemaking at Sinsky Vineyards, famous Napa Valley Vineyards, has joined Unionville's vineyards, and they now are pretty much the worst career move he ever did, he said, by not coming out in New Jersey. 11 years later, he said he's made the right move. He is now making wine in New Jersey, and he's thrilled with it. He said part of the challenge may be that most of New Jersey's vineyards are situated in the western and southern part of the state, and we said that when we talked to him. We found that out. But places have little in common with the bridges and tunnels that people think about when they refer to you as wineries in New Jersey. He says he's hoping that people start thinking of New Jersey as a wine region and not just as a place to go, Atlantic City and on a path to New York. The wine regions throughout New Jersey, he said that now there's 22 wineries that he knows of in New Jersey that are exploding, and he said that some of the wines are starting to sell for a decent price, $52 a bottle for Chardonnays out of New Jersey, which is, $52 for a bottle of Chardonnay, a New Jersey Chardonnay, they also makes Gewurztraminer, Viognier, Riesling, Albino, wide range of Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Grenache. Just a whole bunch of different wines that are being planted and made there now. So, New Jersey, coming up. We'll have to revisit them again once we get through our list here of all the states and everything. We're probably going to start at the beginning, start talking to different wineries again. We'll be going back to New Jersey. And by that time, there's a good possibility they're going to have a lot more than what they got now. So we'll see then. Yeah. Let's see. I'm checking stuff here. Things I want to see. There's no way I can save all of them, but let's go look at this. But there's lots of bits of information. I said, ooh, I'm going to share that with everybody. And then I'm trying to find it all now. Pesticides. Yeah, this thing with the pesticide, I see this popping up a lot. It's really something that people are curious about what's going to happen. This French pesticide thing. This is, since they're required to use pesticides, and the biodynamic grower is saying, I'm not going to do that, it's starting to create an interesting controversy there of what's going to happen with it. Let's see, drought cure, California dowsers. That should be interesting. Arizona wineries to celebrate 30 years anniversary as a designated wine growing district. Arizona is a lot of wineries down in southern Arizona. I told you way back when we talked to Arizona wineries and stuff, I talked to Keith Joshua Winery. Keith is a nice guy. I met him in person, and he did really interesting, and we've kept in touch over the years, back and forth and talking to each other and all that. But the Arizona wine industry is just really exploded, especially down south. Elgin, Arizona, just a short distance south of Tucson. And it lies in the desert, basically. And it's just, you got these green fields and, you know, mountain ranges and sheep, antelope, I should say, and all that run around that area. And it's just really an interesting area. You're driving down through the desert, rolling hill desert, and all of a sudden you see this great big sign, Welcome to Wine Country in Arizona, which is just, you know, you go, oh, what? Wow, what? And it is. It's exploding there. Once an AVA is this, and they're talking about an AVA here. This year, wineries are celebrating 30 years of designation as Arizona's original. And which one is they talking about? I think they're talking, maybe not Keith, but original only American viticulture area. An AVA. Once an AVA is established, at least 85% of the grapes used to make wines must be grown in that geographic area to be referred to on its label, states Keith Manning, winemaker and owner of Keith Joshua Vineyards. I know Keith there, yeah. In other words, we cannot place Sonolta on the wine label unless we grow a very high percentage of the fruit. But they do have a lot of vineyards down there. They have an awful lot of vineyards, and there's a lot of wineries. I checked out not only Keys, but I checked out, I think there were six in that area I had an opportunity to visit when I was down there. And there's some very nice wineries and some very dedicated people in that area. I was down there in the summer, and all of them said the same thing. We don't ship to you in the summer because it's too hot. So they're having a special recognition of the Arizona wine making to celebrate the occasion. Keith Joshua Vineyards will be hosting the third annual Southeast Arizona Wine Growers Festival. It will be featuring 21 Arizona wineries in one location on April the 12th and 13th from 11 to 5. The day will be filled with new wine releases, winemakers, food, wine, 2-day professional chili cook-off, and live music. Costs $20 per person, includes 12 wine tastings and a souvenir glass. And guests who return on Sunday with their ticket stubs and festival glasses will receive discounts. Gates open at 10, And if you are interested, or if you are in Arizona or something, this is far enough in advance. Y'all can make plans down there. Again, it's April the 12th and 13th, 11 to 5. You can contact www.kj-vineyards.com. That's Keith Joshua, kj-vineyards.com. Or you can call 520-455-5582. Again, 520-455-5582. And you can make your reservations. It's about, a half hour, 45 minutes south of Tucson. So it's just a nice ride down there in the hills and stuff like that. Out of Phoenix, you're looking at maybe, 2 hours down to the wineries down there. So mark your calendars, save the date. It's celebrating the Arizona and Arizona wine. You will be absolutely amazed and surprised at what they're doing with the Arizona wines down there. It's phenomenal. I was so thrilled and so happy to be able to taste some of their Arizona wines and what they're doing in their area. And they're constantly planting and trying new things down there and different grapes. And Keith Joshua got his education in Australia. And so he's does a light, fruity style like Australia does, and he does a great job on it. Extreme freezes damages Ontario vineyards. Getting such cold weather, they're having a problem in Canada with the extreme cold. Even though the grapes are cold hardy, they're still susceptible to cold. You can't just ignore it. Let's see what this is. Hang on for a second. We got a caller on the line, wants to talk about New Jersey wines. Let's get him on here. Hello, welcome to All About Wine.
Oh, hey, it's moving. How you doing? And this is Ron, right?
Yes, it is.
Hey, I'm enjoying your show. My first time I ever heard your show on Blog Talk Radio, and wow, you've been out there just dancing across the board, different states and all about wine, but I was really surprised to hear about New Jersey wine, and I grew up in Jersey. And
did you? Yeah.
Yeah, I did, and, down in the central and south where a lot of the, I guess you'd call the wine country is now, and I'm out in Maryland now, so.
A lot of wineries there.
Yeah, you take Baltimore in Maryland, you go Baltimore 26 West to Frederick, and you've got Snake Run and Ligonier, Bordy, Vineyards, and Elk Ridge. Those four vineyards are really doing really good. They're doing, awesome.
Yeah,
but up in Jersey, just as a consumer, I'm not like a wine business guy or anything. I just like red wine. So
good.
My experience is Jersey's always been known for its blueberries. And I think they started out like with dessert wines, and now they're just getting their legs with, with the grapes and, full-scale wine production. So I think it's awesome. And every time I visit the kin up there in Jersey, I try and find a new winery that's open up. And
we're looking at revisiting.
I haven't found the one that I really like yet, but I'm just glad I heard you out there tonight telling it about Jersey wines.
Yeah,
I think they're making an effort. I think they're trying. So
we're thinking about revisiting New Jersey after we've been doing the states alphabetically, and we're thinking on going back to some of these states that we may not have had guests from. Are there any in there that stand out to you at this point that you particularly like that can talk to them, get them on the show?
Well, there's a few wineries that are in the vicinity of, south of Burlington, New Jersey, that are trying to get their legs. I can't call out any specifically, but, on a hot summer weekends, you see the occasional, hey, we have a winery, and you try and follow the road sign, and you get lost. But, you know, it's not all roadway. Jersey is known as a garden state, and they had an awesome blueberry and corn and watermelon crop, and I'm just glad to hear that wine's taking off, and I've picked up a few bottles of Jersey wine, but you know, hasn't caught on like Maryland has.
I have a nephew that lives in New Jersey, and I've tasted a couple of the New Jersey wines. He's sent them down to me, and it's amazing what they're doing. They really are some. You don't think of New Jersey as a wine state at all. And they're really doing quite well with some of the stuff that they have there, and they're getting some people who know what they're doing in there and turning out some great wines.
Well, think about the geography, though. You know, they've got, like, sandy soil and the Pine Barrens and more days of sun than New York State. Even New York has a wine industry.
A big one, yes, yes.
But I got to say, I haven't seen a good winery in Pennsylvania. I've been all through it, and the ones I've stopped at, they've all bought grapes from somewhere else, so...
And this is something I talked about on the program last week about how most of the country, there's wineries all over the country that buy grapes from California, and with the drought there, that could start impacting everybody.
Well, a lot of the northern wineries buy grapes from adjacent states. My favorite, I guess, if you call it East Coast, you know, I'm in Western Maryland, my favorite regional wine is Two Shilling Red out of Williamsburg Winery.
Uh-huh.
I'm addicted to it. Can't get enough of it. So.
What is it? Just a blend?
Yeah. It's their. They call it Two Shilling Red. Their standard red wine. I guess you'd call it a red blend. A little eclectic. But they won't tell you all the grapes that are in there. You got to figure that out. But
we need to get a hold of them. Maybe they'll divulge it to us.
But that's worth checking out. Williamsburg Winery, Two Shilling Red. It's a good, line for them. And it's under $10 a bottle.
Wow.
So
we'll have to see if we can't get a hold of them and see what it is. Two Shilling Red, huh?
Two Shilling Red, Williamsburg Winery. I've gotten it every... Christmas and Thanksgiving for the last 15 years.
Oh, wow. That's...
So, like it that much. But, wow, just wanted to call in and say,
cool.
Awesome show. Glad to hear that you're out there, you know, poking at the niches in the American wine industry there.
Well, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. And check out some of the archives. There may be some shows there that you might enjoy. Go to the website, www.allaboutwinebtr, and there's links to all the past shows and all that stuff. So, and also links to the wineries we've talked to, so that might be something you'd be interested in, too, there.
Awesome, Ron.
Cool.
And you can find me Moving Forward with Freedom. Moving Forward is my BTR moniker.
Well, good.
Oh.
Well,
right,
thank
you
very much.
And thanks for letting me call in. I'm going to listen and...
I appreciate it.
Thanks for the palate talk.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for
thanks
for calling. Bye now.
Yeah, Williamsburg. I hope he wasn't trying to listen on the phone, but Williamsburg. I see they're located there. The stores they're sold in Total Wine and More. So here in Florida.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm wondering if they stock it here. They showed that they do. So.
Really, in Florida?
Yeah, it says Total Wine and More, and Florida was listed on there. Let me go just for checking up here. But
my engineer just told me, too, she believes we've had that Two Shilling Red. And I think about it, and I almost think that maybe I did, too, because I picked up a bunch of wines that, you know, I go down to Total Wines, and I'll just get a mixed case of a bunch of odds and ends just to give it a try. And I think maybe we did have that Two Shilling Red.
Okay, let me see what when I click on it. It says it's unavailable, but they can. Okay, I'm still reading about this, but it's not carried at the store you selected, but I don't think I selected a store yet, so I've got to, but it's I don't know, I'll look around.
Yeah. Maybe my brother-in-law brought it down, too, because he lives up there in Maryland, in that area, and he may have grabbed it and brought it down. The more I think about it, the more almost I think that I've had it. So, but, yeah, great.
Yeah.
We're going to have to call the winery and find out what that blend is, and then see if
they apparently they do ship to Florida, so, and it's only $9 a bottle. Yeah, they do ship, so yeah, we'll have to contact them, see what's going on.
See what they're offering on that. So, fantastic. And
thank
AFRN,
thank
you for tuning in for us tonight, and check us out on archives. Next week, we will be doing Island Grove Wine Company, so tune us in then. So, again, thank you, AFRN.
Mm-hmm.
And good. Thank you for calling in. It's always nice to get a caller in here. A couple other things I wanted to hit on quickly here before we head out for the night is – oh, wait a minute. That's – okay, there. Where is it? Okay. No, that's not it. Oh, okay, here we go. This is something I thought. Prosecco. We have champagne. We all know what champagne is. And we've also talked about the rules and regulations and not being called champagne anymore anywhere except just from the Champagne region of France. And so, therefore, you've got all of your other areas of the world that are calling it different names. Sparkling wine is pretty much accepted here in the United States. But Italy, Prosecco, that is their bubbly. That's what it's called there. And just within the last month, Prosecco has outsold champagne worldwide. Actually, in 2013. The Italian bubbly is now selling better than the French champagne. Why? I don't know. Maybe price. That could be something to do with it. Maybe the fact that Italian Prosecco is flooding the market, because there's a lot of Italian Proseccos out there. But the number of Prosecco sales were outstripping champagne in a number of the United Kingdom's largest retailers. And the sales of Prosecco's up by 50% at the biggest one in England, Tesco, and it's also exploding on sales around the world. So if you haven't tried an Italian bubbly, a Prosecco, by all means, a 500,000 people can't be wrong. So check it out and see what you think of the Italian Prosecco. I've had them. They're nice. Again, bubblies are not just for special occasions. You can have it any time, anywhere. And, here's something else. I mentioned last month, I guess it was, about the new Paperboy wine bottle made out of paper with a plastic liner inside. It is, I just saw something, here it is, that it is going to, it's a three-year deal, at least 3 million bottles, two-year deal. It's going to, it's flooding the markets right now. It should, the financial impact for the third quarter of fiscal year 2014 for the Truett Hurst Winery, they said, is going to be phenomenal. They're spreading it around the world. It's going to be in Europe as well as the United States. It's just exploding. It is available in lots of places. The Paperboy launched in Safeway grocery stores. Oh, and by the way, Safeway was bought out by the same company who owns Albertsons. I just read that a couple of days ago. Nothing to do with wine, but just FYI. Launched in Safeway grocery stores in November. under a 90-day retail exclusivity agreement, and that was extended recently for California, but the brand is entering wide distribution in Florida and the rest of the East Coast. So up and down the East Coast, you're going to be able to see these paperboy bottles, as well as Texas and Arizona. So look for it out there. Check it out. See what it's all about. That should be interesting. The new face of wine, not just paper bottles, but wine in a can we talked about, and all this stuff. It's changing. It's not your daddy's wine anymore. It's starting to change to all sorts of different stuff. So. That takes care of information for tonight. Next week we have a guest. Yay.
Okay. We'll try again next week.
Yep. One thing, Movin said that he said New Jersey is noted for their blueberries.
Blueberry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and blueberries are booming right now, and I talked to the Island Grove Wine Company. They said that there is so many blueberries flooding the market that, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, and they'll correct me, I'm sure, but 2 or 3 years ago, they had to dump something like 4 ton of blueberries in the woods because there was no market for it.
Ouch.
I know. And, you know, I mean, all these little mom-and-pop blueberry growers out there now that are trying to make money because blueberries are popular, and then that big company's dumping them in the woods. Oh, man.
That
so
hurts.
It does. Yeah. It does. So I'm sure they'll be talking about that next week. Chase is the winemaker at his last name is Martin. Chase Martin will be on the program along with Sarah Ashleman. I'm sure I pronounced your name wrong, Sarah, but we will find out how to pronounce it next week. But they both are with Island Grove Wine Company, and we'll be talking to them next week. You can check out their website if you want to do that before we go at Island Grove Wine Company. And I don't have, what is it? IslandGroveWineCompany.com, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. IslandGroveWineCompany.com. So check it out and join us next week to talk to them.
Very cool. They are located in Island Grove, Florida. So
their address is Hawthorne because Island Grove is just small hole in the wall place.
yeah, that's right, Hawthorne.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean
which
Island
is fine.
Grove.
I mean, Yeah.
Yeah, it is small. Island Grove. I drove through Island Grove in like 3 seconds. That's how big it is. No. Mm. So,
is that near like Stark area, or is it where is it in relation to the speed trap? Or,
301 north of north of Orlando, east of Orlando, west of Orlando, east of Gainesville and Ocala,
east okay,
And then back off of 301 about 5 miles, winding back 5 miles into this enormous, enormous growing area where they're doing all sorts of fruits and everything. I mean, it's just, you know, acres and acres. I think they said they had something like 350 acres of blueberries alone. Yeah. So,
well, there
but it's
you go.
Just,
that's right. Talking about the blueberries all of a sudden, yeah.
Yeah, so they're right up in that area there, and a beautiful facility. I had a chance to walk around and see it. Just a beautiful facility, and it's they're going to be making very soon a tasting room right on 301, so you don't have to drive back to the tasting room and back, which is a shame because it's a really beautiful tasting room back there, and it's great to see all these all this fruit and everything growing there, but it is a ways out of the way. So they're going to be opening up one right on 301. Susan said, it should be, or Sarah, I'm sorry, what Sarah said, it should be by the end of this year. They're going to have it open, so something to look forward to there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see it on the map here between Ocala, Gainesville, west of Palatka.
Yes.
Off the 20. Okay, yeah, so 301 to trying to get my bearings on where this is. But wow,
up in the middle of nowhere, cool. It really is, and it's in the middle of nowhere. It's, you know, people come into the winery down here, Florida State Winery. Boy, you are in the middle of nowhere, and I go, ha ha. Let me tell you, you know. You know, Island Grove Winery is in the middle of nowhere, you know.
Yeah.
We're downtown compared to them.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. So we'll look forward to that next week, definitely. That would be March the 20th. There you go.
Yep.
Right, March the 20th.
And you won't be joining us. Well, maybe you will. You'll call in.
Yeah, I'm gonna try on the phone, see how that works. And if I can get the Wi-Fi out there, then I can... I can still Skype. I don't know. Maybe I can get on the web, too. I'll see what I can do.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Be interesting.
Yeah.
Log in on the web and talk on my cell phone. Do it that way. I don't know.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. So, very good. I will we'll go ahead and close the show for tonight. Thanks again to Movin for calling in tonight.
Thanks,
Movin. Speaking with us from Western Maryland. And we'll try and
thanks
get Williamsburg. Yeah, we'll try and get Williamsburg on here. And... see if we can talk about their wines and everything. So very cool. We will close the show now until the 20th. You all have a great week, and thank you for tuning in. And tune in to the live show again next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. And it's a free download on iTunes, and we're also heard on Tuesdays, I believe it is, on the Armed Forces Radio Network. So very cool. We'll see you all at that time. And thanks again.
Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, there you go. All right, bye.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery. Florida State's Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida State's Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.